Good morning, and thank you for joining us this morning. Happy 4th of July, and we welcome you to West. If you are new to the West community, we invite you to text the word welcome to the number that you see on the screen this morning. We are in the middle of our message series on death and dying and what happens in our life beyond. And so I have known Lynn Kunkel for, gosh, a long time. Yeah. She was Lane's soccer coach years and years and years ago, and an excellent soccer coach at that, and a hospice chaplain. I'll let her introduce herself in just a second, and Aaron. They are both colleagues, and we have the privilege of interviewing them this morning. So after this song, we are going to dive into talking about death and dying from their perspective. So thanks for joining in. So after I said, you know, after the song, I saw Aaron's eyes get just a little big. I didn't, you know, prep them that we would be singing together. So why don't you guys introduce yourselves to us and just tell us what you do?
I'm Lynn Kunkel, and besides coaching soccer, I am a hospice chaplain and do grief work with folks here with Hospice of Iredell County. And I've been here about 15 years plus now. And enjoy my work. And my colleague here with me is Aaron Macymore. You introduce yourself, Aaron.
Yeah, my name is Aaron Macymore. I've been with Hospice and Palliative Care for a little over a year. I work mainly on the weekends, and I'm here as a grief counselor for folks as well. So hospice chaplain and grief counselor.
All right. I was telling them that when we polled you all before summer and said, you know, what's a topic you would like for us to discuss and dive into? 82-83% of people voted for a message on death and dying. So we ended up turning it into a message series talking about the meaning of heaven and hell, the words in scripture, looking at scripture verses, eternal life, what is our soul? That's what we talked about last week. And so this week we're going to just put more meat around it. And I thought, what a great perspective to have people that deal with this every single day. I want to be sensitive to the fact, I love Lynn, and she's such an amazing human. Right before I got here, they are dealing with a personal situation of death with one of their colleagues' loved ones.
Yes.
And it was sudden. And so we will pray for you,
thank you.
As you care for other people and yourself. It's real when we deal with it.
It is.
I think that was one of the things. It was just ironic timing, right when, because this message series has been planned for months, and right before the first week, my aunt, who was like my mom, when my mom died when I was young, so she was like my mom when I grew up, and she died, and rather unexpectedly, and I just didn't know that she, I don't think anybody knew that she was that critically ill, and so all of a sudden, the day of the funeral, or the celebration of life service, I was just overcome with emotion and grief. And I'm like, I've got to get my stuff together because she had wanted me to do the service. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how am I going to be able to do it and feel all this? And I realized in that moment, so now is when, do I really mean what I say? And so I'd love for us to start by just talking about death. One of the things I invited the West folks and people in the social media community to submit questions. And many said that they are afraid of dying. And so I wanted your thoughts around that.
For me, the folks that I encounter on a daily basis, if they talk about being afraid, it's because they're afraid of the process of how do I get to heaven? You know, what's it going to be like to leave this world and go to heaven? That's what I hear a lot of. When people already have that spiritual peace, they're not afraid of that. The other things I hear are, I'm afraid I'll be in pain, and they worry about their family.
That's it. And I want to just, I think that's a great question. So when I hear that, my first thought was, I think of other religions. We're all Christians, I think, sitting here, you know, your congregation. We don't have a single chapter of our holy book devoted to death. And so there's a lot of questions about
that. Yeah.
Or, you know, you go to ancient texts and ancient religions, they've got books dedicated to the dying process.
What a great, I didn't think about that. You're right.
I just read a book. I wish I could remember the title, but it was based on Buddhists.
Yes.
And Buddhists, they come into this world knowing they're dying. And I think if we as Christians looked at it like that, we would be a little bit better off. I personally don't fear death anymore, especially, I guess, because of my work here. I don't. I don't know about you.
No,
you haven't been here 15 years,
no,
so maybe.
No. But I agree with what you said about, I hear more that they're afraid of the process of dying, the pain of it, the unknownness of it.
Yeah, continue. I'm fascinated by that. I did not know. I just hadn't thought about it. And we've studied world religions, and as United Methodist, we respect. We come at all world religions with a respect. We believe that Jesus is the way, but, you know, and that's who we cling to. But I didn't realize that they had things focused on, you know, death.
Egyptians have the Book of the Dead. The point is that we don't have a single, you know, none of our holy scriptures are devoted to really death. You got verses here, verses
right
there, and we kind of bring that together.
Right.
And I think that's, for me, that's what I see as the fear, is we really don't know.
The unknown.
We're afraid of the unknown.
And our holy scriptures, how much do they help with that?
But I think the reason that it's vague is because if we knew so much about heaven, we would kind of be like Paul. Remember, Paul wrote about how, I long to be with you in heaven, God, but I know I've got to be here right now. I mean, that's a paraphrase there. But I think that if we knew so much about it, we wouldn't want to be here.
I agree. So last
week, and
we're
supposed to be here.
Yeah. So last week at the end of the message, and all of our messages are on the website. So if you didn't catch last week, you can go to headingwest.org and click on the Beyond Death image, and you can find all of them. But I showed a video from a young man named Ben Breedlove. He was a YouTuber years ago and just famous on his YouTube videos. He had a heart condition from the time that he was a little boy, and his heart would stop. And he experienced that in-between space, you know, when you have, you know, when you're in transition.
Right.
And then he was resuscitated, and when he was older, it happened again, and he told about it on YouTube with some cards. He would hold up his cards, had a beautiful testimony, and he said, I'm not afraid of dying. And in fact, he told his sister, he's like, you know, if that happens again, just let me go, because it's so beautiful. Like, it was so amazing. So I do think that, and just to get a plug for the whole Jesus thing, you know, and this life here, Jesus used to say, you know, the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God is at hand. It is. And one of the things I love about United Methodist theology is that we have an emphasis on the both and. The kingdom of heaven is here and now, and it is also yet to be fulfilled. And it will be fulfilled when we transition from this life to life everlasting. But that beauty that's so rich and so amazing. Like we can have just glimpses of it here.
Yes.
If we get rid of our egos and our humanity, our bent to, you know, missing the mark or sin, you know, and that kind of stuff. But that's 10 other sermons for another day. But so when folks come here and you said they are questioning the process and, you know, like what's going to happen, what do you tell them?
Well, when they are questioning that process and if they're worried about pain, hospice care, hospice, the word means comfort.
Mm.
It means comfort. A lot of people have misconceptions about what hospice care is. You know, I've heard people, they don't want to come here to the hospice house. Or, by the way, we're going to have one opening in Mooresville, if you know about
really?
That.
I did not.
Yes, Mitchell Mack. It's on the Charlotte Highway.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's going to be opening in July, so you're going to have a hospice house in Mooresville.
Oh, that's
now.
Wonderful.
But people fear coming to the hospice house because they think that when they come here, we're going to give them medication to help them die. No. We will give you medication if you're in pain to help you be comfortable. But we do not help people alone dying.
So you're not Kevorkian.
We're not. This state does not do that. Hospice does not do that. So I just want everybody to know that, that we do not do that. I think people get that misconception because, you know, sometimes people are in such pain, and we see that, in this physical pain, that the amount of medication that it takes to keep them comfortable, that they are unresponsive after taking this medication. And so when you become unresponsive, you're not able to eat and drink anymore, and your death does come.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because of the pain that you're having the medication. It's not because of that. And I think I voice understanding that, yeah, we all fear that process of getting there. And I've heard stories like the one you shared about this young man. I had a lady share with me several years ago. I was doing some grief work with her, and she said she didn't fear death, and she didn't fear it for her parent who had died. She said, I was in a fast food restaurant. I was eating, and I started choking. And I had my little 7-year-old daughter there with me. Nobody around me was doing anything. Finally, a man spoke up and said, you need to call 911. This woman is choking. She's going to die. She said the EMS people came, and she can remember she started feeling this really peace.
Hmm.
And she started hearing them talk about, oh, we're getting her back, we're getting her back. And she said, and my thought was, I don't want to come back.
Mm.
And I thought, for a mother of a 7-year-old to not want to come back, that must have been some kind of peace.
Mm. Yeah,
because
that's
you're
right.
A mom.
I do.
I mean, you're a dad. I mean, you know, you wouldn't just want to, yeah.
No, I mean,
leave your young kids? Yeah.
What I want to add to what kind of both the experiences that you all are sharing, and that's the thing that I hear most is the experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard people in this house right behind us here talk about the walls opening up.
Mm.
People coming down, mm-hmm. loved ones coming down to help guide them, and I call them guides.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
mm-hmm.
a firm believer that
me too.
There are guides that will come help you through mm-hmm. that process. And a lot of times we hear people talking, or you'll hear the nurses say, oh, they were talking to mm-hmm. somebody last night. And their family will say, oh, they were talking to Uncle Jerry last night.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I just think that there's so much, like Lynn was saying, peace.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fear there, but I think God's grace and God's mercy brings mm-hmm. us some way, somehow, some hope and some help through that process
mm-hmm.
by these guides.
Mm-hmm.
That's at least my experience.
I totally believe that. When I started being the pastor of a local church and preaching every Sunday, you know, my exegetical, you know, like diving into what the words really mean, study like opened up, and I'll never forget. It was our first Christmas Eve launch service, and I was prepping for the message, and I was going to preach on angels among us and that we're called to be angels in the world. And it was transformative for me to learn that the word angel means messenger from God. Mm-hmm. And so why wouldn't there be guides, mm-hmm. you know, or people or entities or souls that help us move from this to that eternal presence, you know, with God. So over 24 years of ministry, I've had the opportunity, talking about like guides and hearing people talk to other people and stuff, I've had the opportunity to be with a lot of different people, you know, when they are dying, and some of my own family members, mm-hmm. you know, as they die. And just that journey, you know, because we do believe it's a journey of consciousness moving from this realm to the mm-hmm. realm everlasting. And I have seen some that really, really wrestled. They just were not at peace. My stepmother being one of those folks. And I mean, just, you know, the hospital, she had been in ICU, cardiac ICU for days. And all the doctors said, as soon as we turn off life support, you know, she will die immediately. You know, it would be a matter of just minutes, maybe an hour or two, but that's all. And it was so, and this was like, gosh, I don't know, almost 20 years ago. I wish I'd known then what I knew now as a pastor, you know, because I believe I could have helped her more move, because when they turned off the life support, she lived for days, and was never conscious, totally conscious, like could look and communicate like audibly with us. Her eyes told a lot there for a while. I think she just was trying to reconcile some inner stuff that she had. Fear, anger. She was not a really happy person all her life. And so I think before she died, she had some stuff she had to, you know, work through and get rid of. It was not a peaceful, it was not what I expected it would be, like this peaceful, like we're going to turn off the, like I'd seen with other people, you know, she really, really struggled. When you guys talk about peace. When you see people that are not at peace, or when they tell you that they're afraid of dying, how do you help them work through that stuff so that they can get to that soul peace and ready to move into eternity?
First of all, for me, I allow them to be where they are. And if they're not at peace, it's okay for them to not at peace.
Mm-hmm.
And with the goal of moving towards peace, and how can we help you move towards peace? I mean, it's okay for people to be angry that they're mm-hmm. dying. I think sometimes it has to do with people's age too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the younger you are, it's harder.
Mm-hmm.
You might be leaving behind young children
mm-hmm.
That are going to be left here without a parent or, you know, aunt, uncle, whatever it might be. So to allow them to experience that and have a safe place, to be able to voice, I'm scared, to be able to voice, I'm angry, to be able to voice, I'm angry at God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of people
absolutely.
That think you cannot be angry at God. I'm here to tell you, it's okay to be angry at God. I do it all the time.
We preach that at West.
Yeah.
I'm
Wait!
Like, did you miss Wait. That Jesus got angry?
I yeah.
mean, he cried out, my God, have you forsaken me?
Lament's a powerful thing.
Right. And that's one of the things we've been talking about a lot, our team, lamenting because of COVID.
Yeah.
The many people just dying from COVID and just crazy world that it's been, and allowing people to lament
mm-hmm.
because we think it is okay. It's in the Bible. It is okay.
There's a whole book on that.
Yeah, there's
yes,
a whole book
Lamentations.
On it as well. So I allow people to be where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And see what is it? Can we help them get
yeah.
peace? There are things that maybe their unrest comes from because I'm worried my grandchildren are going to forget me. So I encourage, I don't know, you may have other things you can chime in here.
Yeah.
I encourage people to maybe write letters to leave for their children, their grandchildren, whoever it might be,
mm-hmm.
To find some ways that they're leaving something behind for these people to hold on to.
Mm-hmm.
Legacy.
Yeah.
A lot of it's about legacy. What are they leaving behind? A lot of it's identity. Like, who is this person? I've experienced people die the way they live.
Mm-hmm. And that's
if
true.
Grandma's
mm-hmm.
a stubborn old.
Yep.
She's going to be a little stubborn in her dying process.
Exactly. Just like your. Yeah.
Maybe that's what happened to my stepmom, actually.
But,
yeah.
But the ways to help bring about peace is I can remember working at the hospital. Same thing with your grand. This lady hung on for like 2 weeks, no food, no water. Shouldn't even be possible.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Within and minutes of her son arriving from Florida, being here to witness this, him saying to Mom, "Mom, it's okay. We're going to be fine." Mm-hmm. 2 minutes later, she took her last breath, and that was it.
Yeah.
They just need, it might be they just...
They need to hear something.
Yes. Yeah.
So sometimes when they're Lee Green, I think you're right, Aaron. They're holding on for something or someone.
Right.
To hear something. Yeah.
And they hear, you know, one of the things we'll tell families when I'm visiting with them in the hospital if their loved one is dying. But, and I never have to say it here because y'all do such a great job. I love it when folks are here because I just am just a presence. You care for them so graciously. But like they hear everything you can say, you are saying. So don't talk about them as if they're not here. They are here. They may not be able to, you know, respond, but they hear. So tell them you love them. Tell them words of comfort. Give them permission. Give them forgiveness. So I think because my stepmom and I did have, I mean, I don't think she knew what she was signing on for with a 9-year-old. You know, it was just interesting and dynamics. And I mean, I was, you know, grieving the loss, the tragic loss of my mom. And so I'm sure that it was a difficult transition for everyone. And back then, therapy just was not a real prominent thing. And so finally, it was just she and I in the hospital room days after. And I'm like, look, okay, here's the deal. I don't really know what to say right now, but I just want you to know that I love you. I know that you did the best that you could. And it is all good, and God's big and loves you, and I love you, and you have helped me become who I am, and so I'm so grateful for that, and I forgive you of the pain that we inflicted on each other, because it was mutual, and please know that I forgive you, and I know that you forgive me, and so just trying to give those words of peace, you know, and praying the whole time, God, help me mean this. Like, I want to mean this right now. But, and literally, she died. She died alone. My dad had kept vigil. Somebody had kept vigil. And finally, when my dad left, because she was a very independent person.
That's another point. Yeah.
Talk about that.
Oh, gosh. We'll see people sit in the room, what, 24/7. And as soon as they all step out, and we'll even suggest, our staff will suggest, you know, you might want to step out for a little bit and just give them some space. We've also seen, my own experience, when my dad was dying here, my sister wasn't here. And I called her, and my mom and I were both here, and said, you need to get back over here. I told him, I said, Bess on his way. She was the favorite, I always said. Anyway. And so I said, Bess on her way. She'll be here in just a minute. She got here. We're all three in the room. And she starts talking to him. We're all talking to him. We're talking to him about seeing the puppies in heaven, the dogs that have died, which we do believe are in heaven. And, you know, wasn't even 10 minutes, and he died. So, I mean, I believe he waited till we were all three together. So it goes both ways.
There is research done, scientific research done about exit points, you know, and that we have exit points when everything is in alignment as it needs to be with us and God. Even if it's a tragic death, that soul, you know, that soul consciousness and connection with the divine, with God. It's just, I mean, and nobody can prove it and all that kind of stuff, but you just, I have seen over and over people, it just, they're waiting on something or waiting on words or need to be alone.
And like what you shared with your stepmom, I hear our social worker, Karen Luther, tell family members all the time, I'm sure you've heard her say this too, you go in there and you say whatever's on your heart.
That's what she says it too. That's the way she says it.
And so, and she's worked here over 30 years, so she really knows what she's doing. And she really encourages family members to do that.
Yeah, because I don't think you need to wax poetic and be fake in those moments. I mean, my stepmom and I, it was just tumultuous, and it wasn't pretty, so I wasn't going to pretend there at the last minute, oh, you know, I mean, I'm like, you know, I'm sorry, there was some, you know, between us, and I forgive you, and I know that you forgive me.
You know, it makes me think, I'm not even, this might be a little off topic, but that's why I do what I do as a chaplain. Is I value that genuineness and that authenticity. And so at the end of life, at that time, most people are very authentic and genuine.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
and aren't we called to live that way every day?
Yeah.
Like, if we would just be authentic, and that's all God wants from us, you know, and to admit our struggles. And that's why I was glad that they, the West folks, said, I want to do a series on this, because it's what we're, it's what we think about. It's, and if you go to a service for someone, we would kid ourselves if we didn't at some point in that time think, well, what about me? What about mine? What will mine, you know, will anybody come? You know, that kind of stuff, you know. So that's mine. And I'll be, and I will be late for my own funeral, I am convinced. So, so what are some things, practical things from the hospice perspective that you could tell us, even like those of us who are not, you know, facing a diagnosis or anything, like what are some things that we should do and think about maybe when we're not in the emotion of the moment that could help the whole death and dying process?
I think it's good to think about your own death. I encourage people to have advanced directives done.
What does that mean?
Like a living will, healthcare power of attorney, so that people know what your wishes are, so that you don't, so that families don't get together in a tragic moment and have to figure out what would Lynn want at this point in time in her life, so that they know what you want. They know what kind of a burial or service that you want. Like I've told my family, if something happens to me, cremate me. Don't spend all that money on all that stuff, because, you know, go out and have a party if there's any money around. Don't spend, you know, I mean, come on, I'm dead. You know, so I want, you know, so I want to be cremated. But, you know, to have those kind of conversations, you know, if I'm brain dead, it's okay to disconnect me and let me go.
I don't want to give my organs away. If anything's worth anything,
right.
And I've not fried it with Diet Mountain Dew, just give it away.
So. Yeah, that's another, you know, with us having experience in the hospitals as well, we worked with folks who had to make those decisions for their loved ones. Do they want organ donation? So that is another great thing to have a discussion about, to let people know. If I'm brain dead and they can use all of my organs, let them do it. I mean,
and that's practical. That's very practical. Is prepare your family, prepare yourself for that.
So if we wanted to do a living will, what do you do? Like, do you call an attorney? Are there things you can get on the internet? I mean,
You can get on the internet. We actually have we have folks that can help people with living wills. We've actually gone into churches and done presentations
on
advanced directives.
Okay.
And we can send, sometimes our notary is able to go and you can fill them out right there, or you can just get the information on them. We can provide you with forms to use. We can't do like power of attorney, which is a legal thing you need to do with a lawyer, like when you're doing a will. But for a healthcare power of attorney, that I want to name Aaron, you know, my healthcare power of attorney, and when I'm unresponsive and I can't make any decisions for myself, Aaron gets to make those decisions for my health care.
Okay, that's what a healthcare power
that's
of attorney
does.
That's
what a healthcare power of attorney means.
Okay. 2 points on that. 2 points for as far as who can do it. A lot of our local hospitals around here.
Okay.
People can go to them and just ask.
Okay.
Ask to speak to the chaplain department or social workers, and they'll be able to help facilitate that. Kind of what Lynn just said, more practically, choose who you want. Choose who's going to be your best, who's going to do honor your agency the best.
Mm-hmm.
My wife, I know she wants to honor my agency the best. And I told her this. You know, her sister would probably be better. Who would feel... Don't let me linger. Don't
right.
let me do that.
You right. have,
and there are tough conversations.
Right.
And sometimes feelings can get hurt, but you got to select somebody who's going to honor your wishes
right.
to that documentation.
And think, so I was thinking through my mind, you know, like, who would I ask? And, you know.
Yeah, Slane going to be able to do that?
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
So,
no, not Lane.
Neither child. One bite off me sooner. And, but, you know, because when they're in that moment, it's so painful. And I think that's one of the things that always tears my heart up is like when a family's facing those decisions and they don't know who needs to make the call, and the spouse is just absolutely in shock and grief-stricken, and the children are not old enough or whatever, you know, at that stage in life that they
sometimes
can make those
calls.
Sometimes
they don't get along.
Yeah, yeah.
They
yeah.
don't all agree.
And so I'm such an advocate for those healthy conversations. So if mm-hmm. anything comes out of this message series, you know,
get your advanced directives done.
Talk to your people. Yeah. Tell them what you want.
If you want us to set up sometime when y'all start doing stuff in person, and we can send some people to you.
I'd absolutely love that.
Do some education on further education on advanced directives.
I love that.
Yeah.
What makes you keep doing what you do? Because it's got to be so hard. I mean, just this morning. I mean,
It's an honor. People don't have to let us in at this point in their lives, but it's an honor to be with people. I had somebody tell me one time, says, I don't know why you want to be a hospice chaplain. There's nothing good that comes out of that. I mean, everybody dies. And I said, oh, but if somebody dies a peaceful death, that's the good.
It is good.
That's the good. And so that's always, when we're meeting with people, that's what we're asking about. You know, even if the person can't answer for themselves, we're asking the family members, is your loved one at peace? Do you think they're at peace? What can we do to enhance that peace while they're here with us?
That's so cool.
Or in their home.
I didn't know that, you know, peace was such the foundational principle of hospice. I just think that's so beautiful.
What would you say? You've been here a year and you've stayed.
Stories.
Yeah.
Stories. I have met so many interesting people.
Mm-hmm.
And hearing the stories of that. Mm-hmm. So it's twofold. The genuineness and authenticity of people at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I value that. I like being around people with that. And so, in a kind of a, I don't know, it's a dark way, I guess, it's you're with people who you value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who are telling you the truth, who are telling being honest with you. Maybe that fulfills something more in me than it does with them, but that's why I keep doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And number two, this is the stories. I have met some interesting people, and I hear interesting sides of all sides, no sides, whatever you want to call it. People are people, and we all want to die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why I do what I keep doing.
That's
stories
so
and authenticity.
It's so, I mean, I love the opportunity and privilege of preaching, you know, but when I walk with a family through the celebration of life of their loved one, there's just marriages, baptisms, the sacrament of Holy Communion, but mm-hmm. I hold those celebration of life services and that time that I am mm-hmm. with those families, it is a precious privilege. And so thank you for what you do, because I know that it is hope, and we believe that the worst things mm-hmm. are never the last things, mm-hmm. and last things are beautiful things, mm-hmm. but it doesn't take away the pain that I know is present here, pain mixed with joy and peace. So
it's bittersweet.
Thank you for what y'all do.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
It's bittersweet. That's often when we get called into a room after someone has died, is to say, I mean, there's both a joy and there's sadness.
Right.
And you can have them both at the same time.
You can have them both at the same time.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for worshiping with us this morning. May you go in peace. There's a worship song here at the end, and we hope you have a happy and a safe 4th of July or 4th of July week. Go in peace.